Hello, everyone, and welcome to Words of Wellness, the podcast for anyone interested in the way people think, speak, and write about wellness. I'm Daniel Anderson, and we're coming to you from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Today, we're going to be talking about some wellness books, and I have four guests with me. I'll let them go ahead and introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Brady Leviton.
Hi, I'm Cassie Kroll.
Hi, I'm McKinsey.
Hello, I'm Shayon Ben.
Fantastic. I'm so excited to talk about wellness books with you all. First of all, I'm really interested in the books that you've read. I know you're all reading wellness books and you have some insights into the books that you've read, but I'm curious about the idea of a book itself, because we've been reading wellness books online, like reading through the text on screen. And I just passed out some books to everybody in the class to see the actual book. And do you feel like there's a difference when you read these books on screen and you're processing them as opposed to like having the physical copy of the book with you? What has your experience been like trying to like make sense of a book, but just scrolling through it in a computer file?
I can talk about it. So I would say for me personally, it feels a little less authentic to how the author intended it to be consumed. Obviously, the majority of books are not written to be read in like a online sort of fashion. They're all for paper copies. And I thought it was just okay. It feels like a ripoff of what you're really supposed to be doing. I don't take the information as deeply to heart as I normally would. Like, I feel like this is just an online resource. It's not a book. It's not something that was so valuable that it had to be written down and passed on.
I also think the way in which mine is written is interesting to read online. Like, it's coming from a very like scientific standpoint. So I'm reading it as if it's like a research journal as opposed to a book. So I think that's definitely like a change from.
I disagree just because my book is based on Chinese traditionalism. So as I'm not a native, I think I have a better influence of looking up what certain things mean when it's online versus having like a physical book. And then I'm going to have to go to a dictionary or library or something and look up what something means.
Yeah, that makes sense, McKinsey. And I wonder if, I don't know, I've been studying wellness and thinking about this journey motif. And in the journey metaphor, there's usually a guide figure. And you've seen this in films. The guide figure gives the protagonist some kind of token, a talisman. Take this with you. You've got this ring or whatever it is. And in many ways, I feel like the wellness book is that item when it comes to people trying to teach wellness. They write it up in a book and then they hand the book to the journeyer. So I'm just thinking, without that physical book, does it shift anything in some ways? But let's talk about your books a little bit. How much authority did you feel like they had? Like when you were reading through here, what was the level of believability? What was your experience like reading these lessons where somebody is saying, I'm going to teach you about wellness?
So I read Social Intelligence by Daniel Goleman. I think that, the main takeaway that I got from reading the first few chapters was that feelings are contagious. A lot of what you learn is from others. So if somebody says, I'm fine, obviously like they could be fine, they could not be, but you read like their emotions, you read their face structure, you read basically what they're representing, and you can create a thought through that. So that's what my main takeaway was from first few chapters of my book.
Do you, any of you have experience with that contagious emotion idea?
I think definitely who like before an exam are feeling super stressed, like that stress comes on to you even if you walked in being like super confident. And I think vice versa, if everyone comes in like with a confidence, you feel like you're going to do better. And I think that also ends up showing in the outcome and like result of actions and behaviors just because of how the environment that you're in.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I'd say like you are what you feed yourself. If you constantly have these negative thoughts about yourself, you constantly think, oh, I'm only doing this wellness thing as a facade. I'm only like trying to improve myself for some ulterior motive. I don't really care about being my best self. I don't care about being an authentic person. Even if you do all these things that these books say, you're still not really going to improve. Your feelings, your inner emotions are like what really runs all of. If you're not considering those, you're not even going to be able to grow if you consume every bit of wellness knowledge.
Yeah.
I also think a lot of wellness is about just like getting support from others around you. If you have a goal of being consistent or disciplined in something and people around you are bringing you down, not helping motivate you towards your goal, that definitely is.
Yeah, I've definitely seen that with wellness trackers or accountability buddy.
Yeah, I definitely agree because growth is supposed to be about like going through the positive and negative. So if you're only like focusing on the negative, you're not inclined to push yourself even more. You'll stay stagnant. You just won't progress at all.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I feel like it also has this read the room quality to it a little bit. Like sometimes, I guess, in addition to emotions being contagious, Brady, tell me if this is part of social intelligence or if any of you encountered it, that emotions have a physical manifestation. Like you can read the emotions on someone. We think of emotions as like this internal thing. I'm feeling blue, and someone isn't literally blue, but can you recognize the emotions of somebody, even though we think of them as an internal kind of behavior?
Yeah, 100%. It's obviously your thinking comes from your brain, but a lot of it also comes through your eyes. Just if you see somebody crying, you automatically think that they might be sad. Like you don't think that they could be crying from joy. So that's when it comes to having the conversation with them. But yeah, I would 100% agree with you. The fact that a lot of what is what. Yeah,
that makes sense. And fundamentally, I think that takes us to this big theme in wellness, which is the relationship between the mind and the body. And you can go philosophically deep on this with this idea of there's been this mind-body division in philosophy since René Descartes really in the 1640s said, I think, and there's this separate me who's thinking, as opposed to not really what I'm feeling, what I'm thinking is also in my body in some ways. What surprised you about these books?
Going off of what you just talked about, the author of my book broke down happiness into three different categories, and she said that it's 50% genetics, it's 10% life circumstances, and 40% like in your control. That's interesting just in the sense she's using like scientific evidence to back up each of those. And the part that I was just reading was about like the genetic part and how like genes can impact like your susceptibility to depression. And if you experience the same trauma as someone else, like your genes can decide whether you like experience symptoms of depression. And that's an interesting thing of just like the mind and body are connected, just because like the mind obviously is part of how like our bodies respond to certain like circumstances.
I think what surprised me about my book is that it's vague because it gives Chinese wisdom or like spiritual wisdom, which maybe not everybody can relate to depending on your religious like circumstances. And it also gives like short and like kind of poetic statements instead of like concrete advice that you can follow, which I don't think most wellness books, especially not in recent years, have done that as much. So I think that's what surprised me. It took like on a different stance.
Yeah, and you were doing the Tao Te Ching. I don't know if I pronounce that perfectly every time, but close enough. People know it's Lao Tzu Tao Te Ching, which is, I would probably say, an outlier. Like we're talking about these wellness books. A lot of them have science backing or they're very pragmatic, lesson oriented. Not so much with your book.
I definitely noticed that because it definitely, authority more so comes from like the philosophical tone of the book, but there's no like concrete advice. There's no do this and you'll feel better. It's you kind of have to find like the confidence in yourself, kind of giving you advice on how to do that. But otherwise, it's like up to you to interpret the book how you want to.
Yeah. Do any of you have insights into the genres? And now we're talking about the genre of your book, Mackenzie. It was, I would put like a label of spiritual, even though it's Eastern spirituality and philosophy, but it has a spiritual flavor. What did you all notice about your books in addition to the spiritual genre? Did you feel like science bubbling up or coaching happening? What kind of genre thoughts did you have?
I would say that mine was, it wasn't exactly science bubbling. It was more evidence-based wellness. And she herself, this is what was super interesting to me, playing off the last prompt, she herself does not say that she is going to change your life and she's magically going to make you like a new person. She says that she is a researcher who has become a temporary translator to help get these ideas to. And I thought that was super interesting. It's like a self-based psychology, like popular psychology, to where she's saying, hey, we did this study, we did this, we looked at these children solving these puzzles, and these ones that were excited about solving the puzzles had this different outcome. They did this in the puzzles. Even if they weren't excited, they still did 7 attempts on the puzzle. So she talks about multiple different mindsets and basically just translating the scientific jargon into very applicable things in your daily life.
Yeah.
Which I thought was extremely interesting.
Yeah. And genres are tricky because sometimes people want a very clean category, like this is a romantic comedy film. And those ones are pretty predictable. You can see what's happening. But I don't know if this is so neat with these books. Like, it's a guide for wellness, but it's also a science reporting piece, it sounds like you're describing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that was the mindset book. Go ahead.
I think that mine's honestly along the same path as that. Like, the first half is about, like, the backing up her 50-40-10 rules and about how, like, science plays into it. And then the second half of it is, like, different activities that you can choose based on a test she gives you of what could be most beneficial. It's like a authentic choose your path on what is going to be most beneficial to you. So I think it takes the same like standpoint in the sense that she doesn't say, I'm going to fix your entire life. I'm going to make you happy. You're going to find happiness. It's more realistic, as happy people aren't just the ones that are like outwardly like rainbows and unicorns. It's like more of just a feeling that you have to build for yourself.
And this is The How of Happiness is the name of the book? Yeah. I'm eager to hear like more thoughts on the genre stuff, but I'm feeling like a tangent here with this idea of happiness. This comes up sometimes. It sounds like you're describing a recipe for happiness that doesn't include being happy.
Yeah. So what she was saying is that like happiness isn't just like what you're stereotypical. You see someone excited all the time. She was trying to be relatable in the sense of it's not reasonable to experience some kind of trauma and be like, I'm grateful, like at least I have a family. That's not like what our mind specifically goes to. So I think she plays on that in the way she writes.
Yeah. That makes sense. And in some ways it's the worst thing you can do if somebody's experiencing a tragedy or something that's awful and you like, but look at the bright side. That's not the move to make. It's better to just say, I understand this is hard. And what can I do? Something like that. Yeah. Brady, what about the genre of your book? It sounds like it's very sciencey. Is that fair to say?
I would say it's a little bit sciencey. I would say that it's more from a coaching standpoint, as you like mentioning earlier, if it was from coaching. I think that a lot of like philosophical like texts and like stuff like that, they don't really go into too much detail as to like why you may feel that way. They just put out like the being kind matters, or but it's like, why does being kind matter? And like the book really went into detail as to it makes you feel safe or calm, or makes you want to be around like people who make you feel like something and make you feel like you matter, which I feel like a lot of philosophical texts don't do. So I would say more from a coaching standpoint, because it teaches you how to do something rather than just tell you something that you may not actually understand.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I'm wondering, philosophy doesn't seem that well suited for wellness. Tell me if that's accurate or not. Because I can see like you could come up with a philosophical argument that we all have an ethical responsibility because we need to have community in order to build society or something like this. And it's fine. It's explanatory, but it doesn't like take it to the level that you're saying is on a personal level, this is how it's going to work.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoy philosophy just because it gives you like hard truth sometimes. Like, you don't always need to follow somebody's philosophical principles, but I think that being able to understand why somebody believes their own principles will help you understand whether you want to follow it or.
That makes sense. You need both.
Yeah.
Yeah. The kind of understanding of the why, and then maybe this is the how on top of the why in some ways. Yeah. What was difficult or frustrating about these books?
I think for mine, just because, again, I'm not a native to, like, the Chinese language, sometimes it can be, like, hard to interpret which, like, meaning it was, like, whether or not the translation from English was making sense. What I thought made sense may not have been what, like, the author intended it to be. So I think for mine, that was, like, a little frustrating, just so I know I'm not making a mistake and disrespecting or their language in any way.
Yeah.
I would say for me, it was just like I felt like the way that she laid it out was just an oversimplification of wellness, just that it's certain percentages of each aspect of your life, which I think is different for each person. Like, I didn't realize that happiness could be 50% heritable from your parents. And I thought that was just something that was a little bit hard to grapple with at first.
Yeah, that makes sense. There's always oversimplification. And maybe your book took this up, but I think assuming that happiness is the same throughout 85 years of your lifetime is probably inaccurate too. 10% is external circumstances. That's really nice because that means I don't have to get the shiny car or something like this in order to be happy. But I think that probably overlooks sometimes in your life, 90% of your well-being is probably what's happening around you. Other times it's 10%. So it's not that straightforward. And you're never the same person now that you were 10 years ago or something as well.
She's also referring to more long-term happiness and how you can get short-term happiness of fame or money or something like that. But then in the long term, she used some kind of statistic to show that after a certain amount of time, the happiness from that one event doesn't remain a part of your life.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Those are some really great points, but I saw a very similar thing in my book where at the first chapter, it was a binary mindset. It was either you have a fixed mindset or a developmental mindset, and obviously a gross oversimplification, nowhere near that simple. But I think as it goes later into the book, it will delve further into it. We obviously haven't finished our entirety of the reading, but I think it will go through that.
Yeah, that makes sense. There's always so much simplification, which is necessary to teach a concept. If you're a PhD researcher and you've spent 12 years on a topic, then you know every nuance. But to teach that to somebody, you have to distill it down a little bit. Let's do a quick little challenge, a lightning round. Everyone give one lesson for listeners based out of your book. If you had to say just very quickly, here's a takeaway, here's a lesson from the book.
I can start. I'll say that the biggest takeaway would be that you should not just change your mindset and say that you're thinking about this. Oh, I'm not going to procrastinate. I'm going to quit smoking next week. I'm going to quit smoking today. I'm going to quit smoking yesterday. You should say things like, I don't procrastinate. I don't do this. You should change your, not just your thinking, but your entirety of a mindset. And you can't, as you said yourself, you won't be able to achieve your potential if you are just thinking about things. You need to already be inside of these ideas. You need to be flowing with this thought. You cannot be part of this train of thought. You need to be inside the thought,
which I like.
Extremely helpful, extremely beneficial.
Yeah, fantastic.
I think the one for mine that was the biggest part is you won't grow if you're trying to grow within your ego. And that to me meant that you need to find other ways to be selfless and have a balance between what you want to do and what possibly helping someone else out while you're growing could mean for you. Because if you're just ego-based and you're selfish, then you won't continue to push yourself. You won't grow and you won't become the best, positive version of yourself.
I like that too.
Mine is that happiness is different for each person and it's not something that you're just trying to find. It's something that little actions build towards. So it's the little intentional things that you do and the way you behave and act that build towards overall happiness.
Nice.
For my key takeaway, I would say feelings are contagious. I was talking about it earlier, but if you're around people who are sad or angry or happy, then you're going to feel inclined to feel sad or feel angry or feel happy. And I think that what you need to understand is that when you feel sad or angry or happy, then the people around you will also feel the same exact feelings. So just understand that the feelings that you feel around others are the same feelings that they'll feel around you, depending on what you give out and show.
Yeah, that's great. So for our listeners, I think this is really helpful because there's a tangible lesson, a takeaway, but there's also a theme a little bit. And in some ways, I think, Shayan, you were talking about the change that you want should be part of your identity. And if I'm saying I'm going to quit smoking, but I'm someone who doesn't smoke. And then you also say, I'm somebody who can push through a challenge, like quitting smoking. It's changing who you are, your identity. But it was interesting, Mackenzie, where you were talking about getting away from ego, which is you do have your identity, but don't get so hung up on it in some ways, but there's this sense of I, what is this about to me personally? And I think that goes to the idea of wellness is often called self-help. So you're talking about the self. It has to do with who am I and these I questions. And then Cassie, I think this overlaps with where you're going, like everybody's happiness is going to be individualized a little bit too. There's not just like a happy pill that's going to solve it for everybody. It has to do with your own life. And then I like how, Brady, you're complicating that a little bit because, as John Donne said, no one is an island. So yeah, there's all this I, how's this relate to me? But we can never forget the fact that we determine ourselves in relation to other people. And if I'm really like bringing down the whole room, I should think about that. Other people are picking up on that. So our I is also a you sometimes, or it's calibrated based on a you. So these are all really super helpful insights about these books. This is wonderful. So let's wrap up. We're all doing reviews of this book. And one of the things that you tend to try to do in a review is at some point say, who is this book good for? Would you recommend it? Would you not? So the kind of takeaway, who should read this book? If you would just repeat for the listeners, what is the name of your book? And give that sort of final thumbnail thought about the book.
I can start. My book was called Mindset, Changing the Way You Think to Fulfill Your Potential by Professor Dwerek. And a final thing I would say for it would be, when I'm doing my review, I'm going to be talking about a central claim and incorporating yourself into your claim.
Test.
My book was Tai Ching by Lao Tzu. And if you're someone who likes to learn maybe through spirituality, I would definitely recommend this book for you, as it is more so about living and how to be aligned rather than giving concrete advice.
My book is called The How of Happiness. And I think that this book is really suitable for kind of anyone going through a tough time or even a good time. So like, the best way to...
And then my book was Social Intelligence by Daniel Goleman. And then I just think that my book is really just for anybody who wants to understand like how emotions are perceived better based off how you show your emotions towards others and how others show emotions towards you. I don't really think it instills like a set in stone thing that you need to follow, but I do appreciate how it just goes into detail about understanding like why this principle should be followed and why this principle actually.
Fantastic. For the listeners, let's all thank our guests, because this is a wonderful opportunity to decide whether this is the right book for you. We've gotten some great insights. So I'd like to thank my guests and invite all of our listeners to tune in next time for another episode of Words of Wellness.